It's been 1 year and 2 months since Americans elected a president, not to mention a third of the United States Senate and the entire House of Representatives. And with 14 months hindsight, we can now see very clearly what was unknowable then. The election decided who would lead the country in a campaign against terrorism, starting with the war against Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan. Not that the campaign ever dwelt much on such a possibility. In all the presidential and vice presidential debates, the word terrorism popped up twice.
And I worked hard to learn the subject of nuclear arms control and how we can defuse these tensions and deal with non-proliferation and deal with the problems of terrorism and these new weapons of mass destruction. Look, we're going to face some serious new challenges in the next
Cold War force to prepare it to meet the threats of the new generation of tomorrow, of weapons of mass destruction, of ballistic missiles, of terrorism, even of
Between New Year's Day 2000 and Election Day, terrorism and the election campaigns hardly crossed paths on our programs. There was one moment when Ernestine Bradley, wife of Senator Bill Bradley, was asked about capital punishment on the NPR news program Talk of the Nation.
Bill is actually not, you know, not a proponent of the death penalty, except in one situation, and that is terrorism. You know, when we had the...
At one moment in the campaign, terrorism actually was the issue of the day. In October, the USS Cole was rammed in Yemen by a small boat piloted by a suicide bomber.
At least six U.S. sailors were killed today in an apparent act of terrorism against a U.S. warship in the Middle East. The U.S.
That day, Vice President Gore said this: any terrorist should know that whoever is responsible for something like this will be met with a full and forceful and effective retaliatory response. And Governor George Bush said, if it is determined to be the result of a terrorist operation, those responsible should know that the United States will not rest until the perpetrators are held accountable. This is a situation that will bring a response. Dick Cheney said, it's not a time for diplomacy and debate. It is a time for action. That was about it for the presidential campaign discussion of terrorism. The issue did linger a while in the U.S. Senate race in New York. Republican Rick Lazio protested that Hillary Rodham Clinton had taken contributions from supporters of the Palestinian Islamist group Hamas. She returned the money. His supporters staged a telephone campaign against her, citing the USS Cole, and she responded with a broadcast commercial.
USS Cole, killed by a cowardly act of terrorism. Sadly, Rick Lazio is trying to exploit this tragedy. His campaign is making 500,000 phone calls saying Hillary supports this.
It wasn't just that terrorism and Osama bin Laden ranked low on the politicians' agenda. It wasn't very high on our agenda. On NPR news programs, excluding the hourly newscasts, the name Osama bin Laden was uttered about two dozen times in all of 2000. The stark contrast between what figured in our political debate a little over a year ago and what dominates our politics today raises questions about what we gain from our political campaigns, and we've invited our regular guest commentators, E.J. Dionne and David Brooks, to ask them what they make of it. E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post, did the campaign give us a sense of whether either George Bush or Al Gore was up to the challenge that now we know President Bush faces?
I mean, the short answer is no. Terrorism was barely mentioned. On the other hand, I don't think voters think they're going to get huge detail on foreign policy crises that we don't know about yet. They assume that most of the time, the president's term is going to be about domestic policy. They're usually right about that. And on foreign policy, I think they look mostly at character. Will we trust this guy in a crisis, whatever it is? And they made their judgment on that.
David Brooks?
I guess I'd say it's the power of culture that really determined the shape of the whole debate. There really was presumption in the year 2000 and throughout the 1990s that we were in an era of harmony, that technology was going to unite the globe in the embrace of the internet, that commerce was what mattered. We were all going to be embraced by a global economy, and that foreign affairs was to be dominated by commerce. And there really was a presumption that we were beyond power politics. And so what mattered was, you know, how well did Al Gore kiss his wife?
And yet here in the middle of the campaign, a U.S. naval vessel is attacked. Not long before that, a couple of years earlier, the embassies in Kenya and Tanzania had been attacked. And years before that, as we know, the World Trade Center had been bombed. We could have looked at the same events and made the conclusion that that was the center ring of our national life.
Well, there is one lesson to be learned. If there are a bunch of bad guys out there, they declare themselves at war with you, well, then you should probably take them seriously, which is something we did not do.
EJ?
Well, I'm not sure you can fault anyone for not anticipating this awful event. I think Bill Safire had this line, if anybody could have predicted the events of the last year, they probably belong in jail. The notion that we did not anticipate that what has happened elsewhere in the world would happen here it's not surprising, and I guess I'm saying NPR mm-hmm. and no one else should flail themselves too much.
There was that exchange between Lazio and Hillary Rodham Clinton in New York, which used the USS Cole and Hamas money, or money that supposedly was somehow connected to Hamas, as a campaign issue, and it didn't seem to go very far. It seemed to be a very negative moment in the campaign. What did you make of that?
You have to understand how the American voter was resisting any sort of message like that. John McCain, when he started his primary campaign, ran on a theme of patriotic challenges, mm-hmm. reviving patriotism. He said he wanted to embark on what he called rogue state rollback, which was taking a look at countries like the Taliban or Iraq and destroying those regimes. By the end of the campaign, he had walked away from that because it was so unwelcome on the campaign trail.
It was all campaign finance reform.
And,
by right, the time
and, one, of, and one of his advisors, Mike Murphy, went on to work for Rick Lazio, tried it there. It didn't work there either.
And I think that when you listen to those ads, what you realize is we don't deal with issues as the issues themselves. That wasn't a debate about terrorism. That was a negative ad replied to by a counter-negative ad all about whether one or the other candidates was a scoundrel. It really had nothing to do with the debate about what we should do about terrorism.
There is something, though, that is sort of humbling for a lot of us, which is that we think in order to masterfully respond to a situation, you have to know a lot about it. Mm-hmm. You have to have gone to graduate school and read several books about it. George W. Bush didn't know a lot about Afghanistan in the year 2000, and if you voted on those grounds, you wouldn't have voted for the guy. And yet he made a series of intelligently smart and intelligently controversial decisions immediately after September 11th. And it wasn't a question of character. It was a question of judgment. And in the way he handles his decision-making, that is something we do measure in campaigns, and we sometimes measure in the shallowest way. Is he running a good campaign?
So you think that in the reporting or in watching the debates, we got some measure of George Bush's capacity for judgment?
Yeah, and I think—
No way related, no mention of terrorism or Afghanistan, but—
I think we got the sense of moral clarity. I think one of the reasons why his approval rating has astonishingly remained up at about 87%, because he's framed this as good versus evil in a simple, direct way. I think the American people respond to that. And that moral earnestness was there during the campaign.
I want to ask both of you to look forward now in your capacity as political writers. From what you've learned in the past year and a half, that is, we can talk about a whole bunch of things throughout a campaign for months, and they may be, as in that famous instance in 1960, the Kimoi and Matsu issues, the islands that Kennedy and Nixon argued about and we never heard of again for decades. Any wisdom gained, anything you would think differently about covering future campaigns based on the Taliban, Osama bin Laden, Afghanistan experience?
Well, what I've learned is that political writers and commentators make predictions, and sometimes they're about the future. I think that that a certain humility is a useful lesson. And I guess the other thing is I still think the instinct that voters most of the time will make decisions either on a general level, is this person a good and trustworthy leader, very general level, or on a specific level having to do with domestic politics, I still think that's a sound judgment.
David Brooks?
Yeah, I'm still reflecting that EJ and I, who followed every burp and sigh of that campaign, basically wasted 2 years of our lives since it wasn't about what was going to happen. But I would say that the post-Cold War mood was a miasma, was something we should have ignored, and that the politics, which is power politics, which is a violent clash of interests and ideas, which has been going on since the Roman Empire, wasn't going to stop. And there still are enemies out there. There still are vortexes of violence out there. And that America, as the unipolar nation, will continually be sucked into them. And then foreign policy, while boring, is still essentially what the presidency is all about.
David Brooks of the Weekly Standard, EJ Dionne of the Washington Post, and the Brookings Institution, thanks to both of you once again.
Thank you.